Thank you for joining us for our study of the Gospel of John. We concluded our previous class session with John chapter 8, verse 47, where Jesus made a sweeping statement. He said, "He who is of God hears the words of God." And he followed that with a direct application to a crowd which claimed to be God's people. He said, "The reason why you do not hear them is that you are not of God." Did they feel insulted when he said that? They did, and they reacted with an insult of their own, which takes us to verse 48. The Jews answered him, "Are we not right in saying that you are a Samaritan and have a demon?" Jesus answered, "I have not a demon, but I honor my Father, and you dishonor me. Yet I do not seek my own glory, but there is one who seeks it, and he will be the judge. Truly, truly, I say to you, if anyone keeps my word, he will never see death." The Jews said to him, "Now we know that you have a demon. Abraham died, as did the prophets. And you say, if anyone keeps my word, he will never taste death. Are you greater than our father Abraham, who died, and the prophets died? Who do you claim to be?" Jesus answered, "If I glorify myself, my glory is nothing. It is my Father who glorifies me, of whom you say that he is your God, but you have not known him. I know him. If I said I do not know him, I should be a liar like you. But I do know him, and I keep his word. Your father Abraham rejoiced that he was to see my day. He saw it and was glad." The Jews then said to him, "You are not yet 50 years old. Have you seen Abraham?" Jesus said to them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, before Abraham was, I am." So they took up stones to throw at him, but Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple. Returning to verse 48, we see that the Jews called him a Samaritan. But why they did is not certain. There's speculation on this among scholars. It may have been because he was different from other Jews, and this different itself was quite threatening to them. You see, Jesus talked about spiritual things, but they were concerned with the outward and the physical aspects of religion. They had no spiritual understanding, but they were very religious. The name Samaritan was an ugly name. It referred to a captured people who had been deported to live in the cities of Israel when the northern kingdom fell to the Assyrians. They were people of various religions, as explained in 2 Kings chapter 17. It tells us that the king of Assyria brought people from Babylon, Cuthah, Ava, Hamath, and Sepharvaim, and settled them in the towns of Samaria to replace the Israelites. They took over Samaria and lived in its towns. Well, that's the beginning of the people known as the Samaritans. You see, they were foreigners from all over those countries, people who had been deported from their own countries. A similar thing happened during World War II. Hitler, after capturing some of the European countries, deported people into other countries. Whether he got that idea from Shalmaneser and Sargon, we can't be sure, but he did the same thing. He deported people, and that was one way he maintained control of the captured countries. But that doesn't explain why the Samaritans were so offensive to the Jews. But later, in verses 27 and 28, of that same chapter, the king of Assyria, when he learned that the lions were multiplying in the land of Samaria, gave this order: "Have one of the priests you took captive from Samaria go back to live there and teach the people what the God of the land requires." So one of the priests who had been exiled from Samaria came to live in Bethel and taught them how to worship the Lord. Then it tells us in the following verse, "Nevertheless, each national group made its own gods in the several towns where they settled and set them up in the shrines." The shrines the people of Samaria had made at the high places. So what we see here is a merger of various religions and high places which were prohibited in the first place, and we have the resulting hodgepodge of religion. Now, these are the Samaritans, or rather the Samaritans descended from those people. All of this, by the way, took place, as we know from history and from archaeology, in 722 B.C. It tells us that Shalmaneser came and for 2 years attacked the city of Samaria, which is on a pretty high hill, and he died before he could capture it. And then he was succeeded by Sargon II, who made the capture. And Sargon left us a cylinder that tells how he captured all these cities, including Samaria, and deported some 27,000 people. So it's a matter of history now. It's a settled fact. We know all about it, and the Bible confirms that as well. Well, that's the background of the Samaritans. Now, in the following years, the descendants of these people established a temple at Mount Gerizim. That's near the city of Nablus in Samaria today. They rejected all the Old Testament books except the first five books of Moses, which is called the Pentateuch. They apparently inherited that from the deported 10 tribes of Israel when they were captured there. And that ended what we know as the Northern Kingdom of Israel. So as a result of these people and their false religion and their rejection of the prophets of the Old Testament other than Moses, the Jews had a special hatred for those Samaritans. When they called Jesus a Samaritan, they were judging him unworthy of their association. They had nothing to do with Samaritans. But Jesus broke that tradition, you'll remember, in John chapter 4 when he went through Samaria and he talked to the Samaritan woman at the well. She in turn told the people of the city, and they came to Jesus, and he talked to them, and some of those people believed in Jesus Christ. So he was reaching out to them, but that was unusual. Jesus spent most of his time talking to Jews. It was very unusual for him to talk to any Greek or anyone else other than Jews. And that, of course, was in keeping with his mission. For he said himself he came to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. The Bible records a few exceptions, and those exceptions are the glimmer of light that came to the world, that Jesus somehow would do something for everyone else, which was in keeping with what the Old Testament prophet said, that he would be a light to the Gentiles. I don't believe the Jews ever understood that. And I say that because they never would have anything to do with Gentiles either, and treated them as though they were the scourge of the earth. Now then, they added this insult after calling Jesus a Samaritan. They said, "You have a demon." The Bible teaches that there is one devil, but many demons, and those demons can inhabit people. They can tempt them with unclean thoughts. They can bring on diseases. That doesn't mean that every unclean thought you have means that you have a demon in you, nor does it mean any ailment that you have in your body is the result of a demon causing it. There are some people who say just the opposite, however. They tell you that if you've got a headache or a backache, you must have disobeyed God and God is punishing you, or that you have a demon in you. Don't be deceived by those kinds of words. That is not the case. Remember that Paul himself wrote about some of his Christian brothers who were ill, and Paul didn't say anything about healing them, and he didn't say that they had a demon or that God was punishing them. And he did say, we should pray for one another, but he did not pass judgment on every sick person. Now, I know a large church in a city that teaches that very thing, that if you are ill, it is because you have done something wrong and God is punishing you. When you hear that kind of talk, keep this in mind. The Bible teaches us that we believe in the God of all grace. Judgment is reserved for a future date. God is not judging people today for their sins, and we shouldn't expect that. Now listen to how Jesus responded to that insult that he was a Samaritan or that he had a demon. I have not a demon. Now that's the emphasis in the Greek, which the English misses. And by answering that way, he is implying something, that while he doesn't have a demon, they do. And following that, in verse 49, he uses what we call a strong adversative. It's a but. He said, but I honor the Father. And it implies that they do not. Now we go to verse 50, and Jesus said, yet I do not seek my own glory. There is one who seeks it, and he will be the judge. You, of course, know from the Bible that Jesus did not seek the glory of men. His aim was to glorify his Father, and in everything he did that. As for the glory that is due him, the Father will see to it that he gets what is due at the proper time. Now, Jesus gets respect today from most people, but someday he will get glory. John the Apostle tells us about that coming glory in Revelation chapter 5, verse 11. And I looked, and I heard the voice of many angels around the throne, and the living creatures, and the elders, and the number of them was myriads of myriads and thousands of thousands, saying with a loud voice, worthy is the Lamb that was slain to receive power and riches and wisdom, and might, and honor, and glory, and blessing. You can't say that about any other person who ever lived. But this is going to happen to Jesus. He deserves glory now, but he isn't getting it. But someday he will. God has predetermined that. And so Jesus said in verse 50, yet I do not seek my own glory. There is one who seeks it, and he will be the judge. Now, how is judgment or a judge connected to the subject at hand? Well, this refers to God, of course. He is the real seeker of glory. And since God seeks the glory of Jesus, what does that imply about anybody who does not seek the glory of Jesus or give glory to Jesus? It implies that such a person is pitted against the Creator. God in heaven is seeking the glory of Jesus Christ, and if you are not, then you and God are on opposite sides, and you're fighting God in this matter. He wants to give His Son glory. Woe to any Bible teacher who gets glory instead of giving Jesus glory. God intends for His Son to be glorified. That's God's great, great interest, and we dare not give anyone else that glory. Here's an important question to help you understand the gospel. How much does a gift cost? Well, the gift is free to the one receiving it, but of course it costs the giver according to the value of it. And in the case of the gospel and God's gift to mankind, it cost Him the life of His Son. But it's free to us. The Bible declares that the wages of sin is death, but the gift of God is eternal life through Jesus Christ our Lord. That means we need to depend upon Him and trust in Him in order to receive that gift. Until next week, this is Nick Hellevoet reminding you to rejoice in the good news.